Thank you. It's good to see everybody so bright and early. So I'm going to talk a little bit about our collaborative care program for hepatitis B.
Oh, wait.
So no disclosure, no relationships to disclose?
Oh, yes. I have no relationships.
In case that was a biased intro. So this is a table basically showing the great health disparity with hepatitis B amongst Asians. So I think as many of you have seen some of these stats before, we know that the burden of disease falls heavily on Asians, both worldwide and also in America. So more than half of those who are infected in the U.S. are actually Asians. So I think last year, CDC put out a report basically saying that liver cancer rates are on the rise, which is an alarming statistic, but makes a lot of sense when you realize that the Asian population is growing in the U.S., and we make up 5% of the total U.S. population. And as we know, foreign-born are less likely to have health insurance and PCP, so this is a problem that is going to come to head in several years, especially since we know hepatitis B is a chronic disease. So as we know, it's a disease progression that often is ignored until it's too late. So by the time you get cirrhosis and liver cancer, they're irreversible. So the goal is really to prevent these sequelae, and that requires screening, monitoring, and early treatment. And there are a lot of studies that actually show this is cost-effective, even over a period as short as 10 years. So as we know also, early detection of liver cancer can improve mortality. One stat that people throw around is that one liver transplant costs $500,000 minimum. So if we can avoid that with simple screening and vaccination, which is, you know, maybe $1,000, it really stretches in the long run to save us money. So HHS this past year put out a groundbreaking National Viral Hepatitis Action Plan, and two of the strategies focus on viral hepatitis care and treatment in primary care settings, and then also developing care models to optimize management of people living with hepatitis B. So FQHCs, or federally qualified health centers, were also mentioned in that strategy plan, and I want to talk a little bit about FQHCs. So there are 1,250 community health centers in the U.S., and we make up the nation's largest primary care system. We provide care to the underserved and vulnerable, and many of us do provide linguistically and culturally relevant care. And we do that through providing comprehensive primary care, like having internal medicine and family practice, but also pediatrics, women's health, and other services such as mental health and social work. So it's kind of a one-stop shop. And we do offer a sliding scale for those who are uninsured, and for those who don't pay, we don't. They're able to come even if they don't have those funds. So as you can see, FQHCs can reach many communities at risk for CHB. So I think it's important to target FQHCs when we're talking about finding a place that can screen, vaccinate, and provide hepatitis B care for those who are infected. The crucial and kind of missing link at this point is really providing the support and training for the providers to provide that care, especially since specialist care is often not available at those centers, and a lot of patients can't afford specialty care. So our health center, we saw about 40,000 patients last year. We've been around for 40 years, and the vast majority of our patients are served in a language other than English, most of them in a Chinese dialect, but also Korean and Vietnamese. 90% earn less than 200% poverty, and the large majority of them do receive some sort of federally funded insurance. So here is a table basically showing some of the community screening we've participated in over the past several years. So you can see we've had multiple different kind of partners, including the Chinese American Medical Society, the New York City Department of Health, and also Gilead and some other pharmaceutical companies. But also we have an academic partner, NYU. So over the course of the years, we've obviously found that the burden of disease is fairly high in our community, ranging anywhere from 11% to 24%. Some of the issues we found following screening, because Hep B screening is a blood test, you have to come back for the result. And we found that if they don't come back, then you're stuck with this result, and that person doesn't know their result. And this is a big issue when you're talking about screening events. Something at a health fair, there's nowhere for a person to come back to. And we found that the results of our for follow-up were much better when the screening was at an established medical center versus a screening event. There was infrastructure, people knew where they were going, we had care managers to call the patients, and there was a more availability of time for them to be scheduled. So these are things that we learned as we did more and more of these screening events. And then the other piece was really, how do we provide care for those who are infected? Obviously, if people had PCPs, they could go back to it. There's always a certain percentage of people who do not have a healthcare provider. And so being a health center, we were able to say, hey, you can come back here, we can be your medical home. But then our physicians were basically realized that they needed to provide the care for their infection. And for a lot of places, usually, if the physicians are not comfortable as primary care physicians treating this, they would refer to specialists. But we found out a lot of our patients, we would write the referral, and they wouldn't be able to go because they didn't have insurance. And the cost to see a specialist out of pocket, it was out of reach. And they actually just really honestly wanted their primary care provider to just do the care for them. So the key was, well, how do we equip our physicians to actually treat and care for chronic hepatitis B? And so we basically started thinking, well, could we be a medical home for those who are infected? So the approach we took is the chronic care model, which you may have seen for other diseases such as diabetes and hepatitis B. And the goal really is to change the health system and the community in these different ways, and there are basically multiple levels and areas to improve that basically try to impact the interaction between the family and the practice team. So the four things I'm going to talk about today are the self-management support, delivery system design, decision support, and clinical information system. So the goal is that if you improve the interaction between the physician who's prepared, proactive, and the patient who's engaged, then ultimately you can improve the outcome of the disease. So first I'm going to talk about delivery system design. So well, what we learned from our screening programs is that it was really important for us to start following this group of patients intentionally. So first it was the individuals who needed vaccine. So as many of you might know, the Hep B vaccine is 3 shots given over a period of 4 to 6 months. Well, what happens is people forget to come. By the time it's the 3rd shot, many people don't return for the last shot. So we found it was really important to be able to follow these individuals in a database so we could see who had missed their appointment and who needed to be called and reminded. So over the course of the several large screening programs, you can see that our vaccine completion rate, you can see a natural attrition, 88%, then 80%, then 74%. And and this is with case management. So without case management, it's definitely far less. So on average, our completion rate for 3 doses is 73%. Now, if you're an Asian parent, 73% is like a D, right? So you think this is like failure. But in the realm of like vaccination programs, 73% is actually quite good. And I think there are a couple of reported literature on citywide screening programs, San Francisco and BeFree NYC being one of them, which attained 50%. So 73% is pretty good. The citywide sites had to deal with multiple sites and multiple practices, and it's a little bit challenging. And even 50% is pretty good. If you look at the literature of vaccination rates in high-risk groups, such as IV drug users, it's actually 30%. So one thing we started implementing was a collaborative care team where we had monthly meetings with individuals from basically different parts of the health center. So a core part of this program really is the clinical informatics system. And one thing we started doing is creating a registry and putting all the individuals who have Hep B into a registry and then putting out a report on all their clinical and demographic indicators. And then with our EMR, we're able to tailor a lot of our forms, flow sheets, test orders, reminders to be more Hep B specific. So this is just a screenshot. If a patient has Hep B, basically on their banner at the top, you see right away the Hep B pops up. So whoever's providing care for them instantly knows that they have hepatitis B. At the bottom, this is our order sheet for the physician. So the physicians, as they're seeing the patient, can add the patient into the registry. So as a follow-up of basically with EMR, we can actually provide a lot of decision support for our physicians. So what is decision support? So there's a study that shows that the median visit for a primary care visit is 16.7 minutes. And this was actually a geriatric patient. They usually have a lot of problems. So usually for younger people, it's actually far shorter than 16.7 minutes. But during that time, 6 topics were covered. 5 minutes was the longest topic, and the remaining topics only received 1.1 minutes. So you can imagine there's a lot a physician needs to do in a very short amount of time. So the goal for decision support is to provide the tools for the physician to be efficient, to put all the pertinent data in one place so you don't have to scroll through many, many sheets, and then to facilitate clinical decision making and thereby improve quality and decrease error in terms of care to the patient. So one of the simple things we did, this is an order sheet for lab tests. We put all the hepatitis B labs in one place. So there's less likely for the physician to forget to order certain tests, and it kind of reminds them what tests to order. So in terms of centralizing all the pertinent data, on the bottom you see a flow sheet. So it basically shows you kind of the sequential lab test for each patient, the viral, the liver function test. You can see the trend if it's going up or down. And then this is the preventive reminder page for the patients, so basically all their health maintenance stuff. And we added hepatitis B vaccine and hep B immune status. So if a patient hasn't had their hep B test done, this should trigger the physician also to order that. So on the bottom right, you see this is the order sheet again that I showed at the beginning. And this basically, for a patient with hepatitis B, we program in a protocol basically saying if they haven't had a viral load or LFT within the past 12 months, this would pop up as well. So, and then this is a summary sheet of the AASLD guidelines, which we put in every exam room, which provides the physicians the guidelines in terms of when to start treatment. So the good thing about the registry is we're able to start looking at the clinical indicators of our patients, and also it shows you whether our doctors are doing a good job at ordering tests. So for ALT DNA, they did pretty good, 80 to 90%. For E antigen, E antibody, 77%, so we could do better on that. So one thing we implemented was a peer review where we do a sample of charts for each physician, and then the physicians review each other's charts for quality indicators. And this is always kind of a reminder to them what they need to do also. So next is self-management support, and this is basically patient education, patient engagement. This is the education form we provided for the nurses as they see a patient. It kind of standardizes the education we give to the patient so they can check this off, what they talk to the patient about, and also indicate if they gave the patient any brochures. This is our patient tracker, which we've been giving every patient who has hepatitis B to document their lab tests and if they're on a medication. Basically, this allows them to see their own results, and then if they ever move, then they have a portable patient record to provide to their next physician. So we did a little kind of survey to find out if they were able to understand it. And the vast majority of them, the bold ones are the right answers, understood, you know, transmission. So 83% knew that they could prevent transmission by using condoms, not sharing toothbrushes. But you can see there's still a fair number of people, 20%, think that you can get hepatitis B from eating with somebody. So there's still a lot of education that needs to be done. And then in terms of patient satisfaction, people do like having the tracker. Some of them, the majority did say that they paid attention to the numbers and they like having the record. But even those who don't actually pay attention to the numbers still like having the record of it. And then there are a couple who, you know, didn't really find that it was that useful. But, you know, for the vast majority, they found that it was actually helpful to them. So, and then how about the physicians? This added a little time to their visit. Do they find this useful as a tool? And they did find that it was important as an education tool that to tell the patients that they need to come regularly and that they could use it in the discussion of the results. So this is another tool we use. This is a Hep B Moms roadmap. And this basically, we tell the mom to bring this to the delivery room so that they can tell the delivery staff that their baby needs hepatitis B vaccine. And some of them don't have the language skills, but we say just hand them this, you know, and the staff will be able to figure out that this is, that your infant is at risk and needs to get these vaccines. So in terms of evaluating a program like this, we created a logic model. So the strategies kind of in the middle are what I just talked about, the different changes that we made in our program in terms of implementing all the self-management and decision support. And the impact, the goal in the very end is what you really want is to be able to, you know, eliminate health disparities, reduce Hep B in the community. These are things that are very difficult to measure, obviously. So we found some short-term kind of outcomes that we could use. And some of that includes increased patient awareness, retention rate, are patients coming to their visits more often? Are they adhering to the medication? Those things are kind of short-term measures for the program. So we just started doing this. This is very preliminary. One of the things we looked at was medication adherence. So the risk of not adhering to medicine is hepatitis flare, viral resistance. And the treatment course for Hep B is pretty long-term. It's at least a year, and it can be multiple years. So if you think about how difficult it is for some of us just to take an antibiotic course for 2 weeks, can you imagine taking a medicine for every day for at least a year? So one of the things with our patients that are care managed, our hypothesis is that they should be less non-adherent because they have somebody following them. So we looked at the measure of how many patients start but do not complete 1 year of antiviral medication. So for those in the Hep B care program who are care managed, about 8.5% dropped out. For insured patients who didn't have care management, it was much higher. It was almost 20%. So the next thing we looked at was retention rate. So how many patients are dropping out at the end of a year? So for the Hep B care program, it was about 4%. Again, like as I mentioned, these folks are followed by a care manager who is has a nursing background, who is an MA, and is able to troubleshoot with them. And when we compare that to the general internal medicine program, it's much higher. It's 22%. So these are measures that made us realize, hey, I think this program is helping that individuals have somebody, a care manager that's following them. So overall, in summary, the lessons that we learned from this, it does require involvement and commitment on many levels from many different kinds of staff, including our clinical informatics. It's important to provide the training decision support to equip the primary care physicians to care for hepatitis B. And then the EMR is actually a really powerful tool, especially for assimilating data, for decision support, for data collecting, and then reporting back to physicians. But it requires informatics resources to program the protocols for hepatitis B, and we were often limited due to competing priorities. They had a million other things they needed to do for the health center. So care management is also crucial for monitoring this population and helping with retention and adherence for medication, but it, again, requires dedicated staff. So we have 5,000 Hep B patients, 2,500 are active. Only 450 people were able to care manage, because one care manager cannot manage 5,000 people. So ideally, we would love to have more resources to do that, and I think doing evaluations like this might help us and maybe other groups get funding, I think, for important positions like care managers. That's it. Thank you. This is just a picture of our screening day for World Hepatitis Day this year.